Mr. James, really, 11. Right, Mr. James, exercise bumper and the Duke of Gloucester.
Right. Well, of course, we were all exhausted when we got back to Thetford. I remember, I think I slept solidly for about 24 hours. Mm-hmm. It really was.
How long did the exercise last?
Four days.
A week?
At least 5 days. Anyway, the test was no sleep for 4 days. Yeah. I think it was the last 4 days.
Could you talk us through the exercise? Obviously, you were in the signals platoon, but the start, you were at Thetford.
It was around East Anglia, it was from Thetford, all around East Anglia.
And how
mobility was the exercise and endurance, you see.
And how were the rifle companies? Were they marching to locations, or were they in transport? Or how were they?
They were carried in, some of them, in transport vehicles. Mm-hmm. At certain places, because we had to go from A to B. And I ran out of petrol. I don't know what the hell am I going to do. I have no money either. And I called, I remember short in a village where there was a petrol pump outside. It's sort of a hand technique now. In the early days, pumps, you see, one petrol pump outside an ironmonger station, an ironmonger shop, and you can run it. So I stopped and I said, I hope you can help me. I said, I'm on an exercise. I said, with the battalion. And I said, I've got all the petrol. I said, I've got nothing at all. I said, I can't move. I said, can you please fill me up and give me a check, and I will hand it into the battalion, they will be a virtue. He said, yes, I can't say no. He said, yes, certainly no. And he filled me up with petrol for this pump and gave me, and took my army number, American name, and my unit, Thetford, and he was the person actually, but he saved my situation. And then I had to sort of carry on and find the battalion, mm-hmm. which I luckily did.
Mm-hmm. And you're on a motorbike, this was on your motorbike. Where would you be going on your motorbike between where and where during the exercise? Who would you be liaising with within the battalion?
Oh, the adjutant and the CO and company commanders. Mm-hmm. I was a signals officer, you see, and I had my instructions ahead. We received a sheet of paper. I had the full sort of orders, battle orders and everything. It's a long time ago, and I can't remember much about it.
But it would be basically, you'd be telling a company to do something.
But I would be seeing that my signalers were allocated to companies, that the companies weren't wanting at all for anything in the signals department, that men themselves were all right, and if they wanted to do an evening, if they wanted actually there were new men put there as well from time to time to give them relief, mm. and so on. And generally with the company commanders and the adjutant and the colonel.
So what kind of things were going wrong? Obviously, Seabag Montefiore was going wrong, chopping the lines up.
I was going up and down the line, reported to the adjutant on his orders.
And who was the adjutant at that time?
He was a chap with a Scottish Glengarry. Now, he was a DLI, and he was a Scotsman with a Glengarry. I can't remember his name, but he was a very smart young chap, tall, with a kilt and red and white squares on his Glengarry, and he was our adjutant now, I forget. But that just shows you, see, that the battalion was still growing. It was a wartime battalion. We had Walter Bernard, ASP Murray, and even the adjutants were from other regiments. And it seemed to me they then spared bonds in the Ministry of Defence somewhere with no job, and they sent them to the DLI for experience until eventually Dickie Ware arrived.
That's fantastic.
From that moment, we were strictly DLI, and we're on the footing for G10 as well for war. But before then, we had all sorts of strangers coming and going.
So, still talking about Exercise Bumper. Obviously, you'd been away from the battalion for 3 months, and they were still very fresh, and they were still recruits. When you got back, you were taking part in this major, I think at least probably divisional exercise, and you had rifle companies at this stage. What impression did the officers, the company commanders, the various different company commanders, do any of them stick in your mind at this stage during this exercise? You were going between the different units.
But I remember particularly as well, I remember particularly, and I think that you may have evidence of that, because there have been lists in lots of the DLM Museum where the changes were very frequently and fast of the complement of officers down to CPMS in each company. And the names were changed so quickly, every few months actually, that you didn't know who was where. We had an RSM, RSM Pickering. He was with us for quite a long time from the depot, but he was an old man.
Was he a Geordie?
Yes, he was a real Durham man, but he was a tall chap with a rather beaten face, and he looked every inch of 60. And I remember a really affable chap, Pickering, and I thought he was a little bit old, but you know, but he was living with us for months, and then suddenly, RSM Thomas.
Yeah, but this is again, this is later.
It just shows you that there were changes all the time in officers, and new names, and coming and going, and the officers who eventually were
But going back to Bumber, you had this big exercise, you had rifle companies on the move, you had a whole kind of structure of instructions and so on. Just talk us through a typical day in the exercise from your point of view as a signals sergeant in charge of having to. You're having to move from A to B. Just talk us through that.
The typical day that I can remember was tearing around the countryside at hell for leather pace in convoy, getting somewhere fast because the enemy was there to fill the gap. And no signposts in East Anglia. Every signpost had been taken down all over the Churchill. So that there was, you didn't know where the hell you were, and you had to read a map. And even at the crossroads, you didn't know where you were. Although now and again there were MPs, and there was the regimental police as well. The regimental police as well at certain busy crossroads, waiting there to tell you which road to take. Maybe there are four different routes, you know, and he was there to say down there, and it was all so fast. And then he'd jump and off he'd go. But my God, I can remember the I've got to keep up here. My steel helmet was over my down my back, and I'd be throttled by the strap around my throat there, and I turned corners and gravel and nearly come off more than once, and I didn't, thank God. But you know, I had to move this motorbike as well. And my main aim was to keep up with the adjutant and not lose the convoy. And keep close to this smart young adjutant who was using me as well for locations and whatnot. And then suddenly there'd be a stop. And we've got to sort of get companies situated and with signals deployed and lights out and companies in position. We would have arrived at the panic station.
How would you be on a, you know, you drive somewhere, the men might march somewhere on a night. How would you have to dig in for the night? Would you be practicing that? Would you be?
The soldiers would. They would be digging in, and they would sort of be in position, and company quarters would be set up in some old building somewhere, you know, and this is what they were there to find a place to go, and sometimes company quarters. And truck was normally a truck, a 30 hundredweight, you know, the cook's van. And each company, don't forget as well, had a cook, and a 30 hundredweight van with all the stores and the cooks. Travelling in the cook's van.
So where would you stay overnight? Would you be?
Oh, I've slept in a pigsty anywhere. If there was a farm, a good farm buildings, and I'd been lucky. But one night I actually finished up in an empty, clean pigsty, and I was there on the deck, there sleeping in the sight of the stars.
So at this stage of the war, obviously the British think and move towards mobility in warfare.
That's right. And that was the exercise.
Backtracking a little bit, I mean, during your basic training back in with the Beds and Hearts, was the emphasis, because then that would be pre-Dunkirk, did you have any training then with kind of trench warfare, you know, the old style warfare that was thrown in there?
No, we dug trenches in the Beds and Hearts. We didn't have anything like that. We were, just as they say, we had just passed our basic training, and we had gone through the sausage machine from the depot. And then we were signallers, and we were still in training as signallers, and we were farmed out to the countryside as signallers. We weren't told exactly what was there, but we weren't filled in. Bedfordshire is a big county, but we were sent to a place called Wrestlingworth, as I've stated, and as signallers, and we earned a canvas there. And we knew that our role there was to guard an airfield. We didn't know where the airfield was.
Yeah.
We didn't even know the name of the airfield. And as I said, there were no signposts anywhere. Well, since then, of course, I've realised, you know, there's a place called Wrestlingworth, there's a place called Pond, there's a place called Sandy, Bedford, you see, and all in that region. And since then, I'm Bassingbourne. And since then, I've realised that where we were in Wrestlingworth, just over the hill was Jackson, fighter airfield, which could have been captured by paratroopers, German paratroopers. That was one of the battle of airfields, Jackson, and we were obviously there, and as signalers anyway, deployed for the defence of that airfield. We never saw any, we were signalers in Wrestlingworth, we were, and we were up trees, big, big apple orchards. Coxes on which could be trees, you know, and we were and things like that. But the apples, it's too early for the apples, but we were in apple orchards, and the apples were small and coming on. Yeah. And we were up a tree, I was up a very lofty tree with a spike stuck in the tree in my oldest lamp. I was focused to another oldest lamp that was 10 miles from me, and he was receiving my messages, and he was transmitting. Beyond him, we were in touch with Bedford ITC.
Now, jumping forward to back at the bumper, did you feel during bumper that your methods were of a different order to that? They were more, did you feel it was a more sophisticated style of soldiering that you were doing in bumper?
We were having a taste now of what it's going to be like in battle and in action. If we are going to be in action, as it were, in Dunkirk, and there was going to be a rout, and you had to sort of move fast, either retreat fast or get to a place fast, we were experiencing what the British Army must have undergone in France, the VF, you know. They still haven't got the new format for training. After that, we had battle schools. We had real bullets.
We'll talk about that as we move on. But in terms of still on Bomber, contact with other troops, other units, so the units in the brigade.
We weren't aware of it, but we were probably in a 139 brigade, and the Leicesters were out. Some were near us, and the Sherwood Foresters were near us, and we didn't come across them. But
so your signalling responsibilities would end at battalion level.
And it's just that there were three battalions coming down the brigade, and they were brigade headquarters as well, getting communications from our battalion, from the 16th DLI, from 16th DLI headquarters, and from the other headquarters of the other battalions as well, with the, as I say, the Royal Corps signals being at brigade.
Did you have umpires that would...
Oh, absolutely, umpires everywhere. That's right, umpires everywhere. say, you're dead, you know, you're knocked out.
And how would they do that? You'd be...
you've then got to fall out and stand by the wayside until you've been instructed.
And were you ever...
You might be... But I was captured in... this is not in Pompeii, but later. I was captured in another exile by the Canadians.
What about... Yeah, we'll talk about that. But what about in Bumper? You had all these umpires. Can you remember any instance from that exercise? Were you with the attacking force or the defending force?
We were on the move. We were the attacking force. Mm-hmm. Very much the attacking force.
And can you remember the people that you were attacking? Any of?
I can't remember his name, but I was in the company. But I remember particularly that we were the attacking force and they had to get there quick. Mm-hmm. And this is what it was all about. This is why the Duke of Rossland was out as well, part of it. It was the defence of East Anglia.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the exercise, you talked earlier about how Seabourn Montefiore was impressed with the signals side of it. Can you remember anything about his remarks on the performance of the other elements of the battalion, the rifle companies or the other headquarters?
I was on the post-mortem. Mm-hmm. As the signals officer, because I was still, so I've come back and I didn't know what was going to happen because I was going to attend Loss's Mess for the post mortem and exercise bumper. Mm-hmm. And all the commanders were there. Mm-hmm. And they were all getting a shellacking and a ribbing from Lieutenant Colonel Seabourn Montefiore. Which is why I remember very well.
What was the general tenor of his criticism?
He was really angry with some of the mistakes made. And he was forthright. He was a very good colonel, actually. And he was really very angry with them.
What were the mistakes, though?
Well, I can't remember offhand now because I was embarrassed to sit there, you know, and to see the various company commanders getting shot down in flames by the colonel. Mm-hmm. And he had his notes, and he was something was over my head, but he was so he was giving him a bollocking for not supporting people on their left and right and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it was very amazing to me, especially when I was given a glowing account. I felt very superior to these people.
Mm-hmm. And so the problems would be that they weren't keeping up, or that they lost track of each other?
They made mistakes, and he told them that these mistakes had to be rectified. Mm-hmm. And that he showed them the error of their ways, and it's a long time ago. A lot of more than under the diaphragm. Picture, and I can still see them all in this big house that he had commandeered for himself in Thetford. And I was there, and I was greatly honoured to be really speaking. I really felt, you know, honoured as a signals officer. And I'd done this exercise, and I'd done the blown reports on the Labour Company commanders in my presence.
Can you remember who
and ashes.
Who were the company commanders at that time? Any names stick in your mind? You've mentioned Sholto Olsson as your own.
I rather think that Captain Brown was one. And then there was, there were so many changes. I don't think at that time that balance had turned up.
Major balance, that is. Major balance.
Sholto Olsson was a company commander or headquarter company. Balance might have been. Although I don't think he was company commander. But I remember seeing him as a lieutenant at that time in the battalion, because he was talking about the Morgan of Swansea to me at the time. Mm.
Did he have a Welsh connection in his family then?
No, but he knew that I was Welsh. I mean, the Swansea is turned for Bombing. Mm-hmm. Swansea, Cardiff. Mm-hmm.
So Bumper would probably possibly be the first major exercise that the battalion took part in. Now, you'd been away for 3 months, so you come back to the battalion at Thetford, and obviously they've been training hard in the meantime. Now, what impression did the battalion make on you?
Well, that,
after 3 months away, what were the changes? What did you feel had changed?
When I rejoined them, first of all, that the fact that they were in Thetford, particularly, that I was told that the battalion had taken over a priory. There was a marvellous place in Bedford, in Thetford, called Thetford Priory. I've got a photograph of it somewhere. It was an old monastery or priory, ruins, arches in the moonlight, and looked really, you know, spooky and eerie. And it was in a big park. And they put huts up in the priory for the lads. But the signals schools was at the priory in a building. There was also, despite the ruins or whatnot, there was a large house there as well. And the signals store was in a building because security, it was locked up and we had all these batteries and all the expensive equipment and everything else. But the chaps were in huts in the priory, but the battalion was spread out everywhere. In the town centre, up by the square, opposite the post office, there was another house there, which became the accommodation for the sergeants. And I was eventually told that I was going to stay in one room, in this empty house on the square in Bedford, past the Bell Hotel, this little town square. It's not a very good town, Bedford, but anyway, you know, it's busy. And So my bedroom was in this house with a load of other sergeants. And
Could you just talk through, I mean, obviously some of these people would have, people you knew, but some of them would have been new. Can you just talk through the sergeants? It's stuck in your mind from this time.
There was one sergeant there, his name was Sergeant Banfield. And I'm going to put him, in a pillory. Because my mother gave me, I smoked in those days, a real silver cigarette case with a lighter. That's a birthday present. Was it my 21st birthday? It might have been. But it was a special present. And I was in this house with these arms, and this house in Bedford, or best house. He had a little pencil starch there, like a little spin he did. And I went into the bathroom, and I used my cigarette case with like a melee inside for shaving. And I got my shaving stick and towel on the back of my room, realizing immediately, damn, I've left my cigarette case in there. And I went back a minute later and it had gone. And I could see the shape of it back to his stomach. And I challenged him to open his pocket, and he wouldn't. And he started to threaten me and his fists and whatnot. And I knew that he was a liar and a thief when I told him so. But my bloody birthday present had gone. And he snuffled it, and I never got it back. But he died of cancer later. I didn't say that, but anyway, that's the way I felt at the time. And he was one. And there were people like that.
Was it still RSM Pickering at this time?
Yes. It was still RSM Pickering because Thomas and John is in Rye.
Yeah, and so other sergeants and their particular mannerisms, do any of them still stay in your mind from this time? Any incidents involving?
Yes, Pippin was certainly with us because we went for later to another place in Northwater. But because we were sort of all spread about in Thetford, I wasn't aware where half of them were. But there was a place called Samuel Court. And in Thetford, and by now, at this crucial moment, in this short time, Charlton Robertson had snuffed the signals officer, namely me, and told me to put up three stripes and a crown, and I was a CPMS from this moment. So at that crucial moment, having been on that exercise as a signals officer, the next day I was the CQMS after the post-mortem, you know, when I got the praise. So suddenly I was in Thetford as a CQMS, and I had to learn quickly the CQMS's job for headquarters. The first thing I learned was that they'd had a place called Sandal Court, about 4 or 5 miles away from Thetford. I know the direction. It was on the map, slightly northeast, about 4 or 5 miles, Sandal Court. And they'd set up in a house a little sick bay for those Donald dispatch riders and things like that, if you got motorbikes, and people not too ill to go to hospital. Some chaps were sick and generally sick, and this little sick bay was there, and they had about 4 or 5 blokes down there in their sick bay, and I was told that I would have to go down there to see it and to take rations down there every day for these people, and there was a cook called Tinsley. And so there must have been about 5, a total of 6. So I had to go down to find out where Shadow Court was. It would be a lovely summer's day as well. And this was shortly after Bumper. And the MO was visiting. It was newly set up. Shadow Court, newly set up. It was a gaunt, empty house in a meadow next to a church that was closed and had been closed for years and years and years and not used. The house had been scrubbed out right through before I sort of took over as CPMS. But there was one room with a bay window looking out onto the lawn with a rabbit stool. Rabbit on the lawn. And the glass window cutting, I knew that. And I said, Tuesday, I've got to bring you rations every day. He said, yes, come on. I said, you're the only cook, yeah. I'm appointed here. Right. I said, I like this bloody place. I said, I'm going to stay down here for a day or two myself. So I saw the half a dozen looks like in this big room with a bay window. And one was Sergeant Dunn, who was a dispatch rider. And he came off his motorbike, and he was a Geordie. He was a Salerno, he was, Sergeant Dunn. And he was there. And he's a real Geordie, he was. And there were others, and they were all reading picture poster magazines, and they had come off and they had minor injuries and whatnot. The MO would go down every day, but it was newly set up, and I think this was day one or two. However, I'd drawn the rations, I'd been taken down in the ration truck, and so I was going back that day. And then the MO turned up. So I said, I'm going to come down every day and see them. You'll need sufficient rations here. I said, what you want. So I said to the driver, I said, if I come back with you, can you bring me down later in the day? He said, yeah, yes, I'll do that. So I went back to get my small kit, shaving, and whatnot. And he took me back to Shadow Court. And I told everybody that I was. If I wanted, I'm down at Shadow Court. And I would stay there all the night. And I'd be back tomorrow morning. So I went back there. It was still sunny and lovely. And I thought, I'd take down a .22 rifle, because I'd seen the rabbits. And I went back. And I shot a couple of rabbits. And I told you my father's sell 200 rabbits a week or more. And I punched them, took the ears out of them, and gave them to Tinsley. I skinned them. And I said, Tinsley, 2 fresh rabbits. And I could roast it tonight. He said, okay. Come on, okay. He said, that'll augment the rations. So